Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Enterprise Sales Development Podcast, brought to you by Cyence Technologies. We interview outbound leaders at fast growth businesses to learn their secrets and bring you actionable insights. Thanks for joining us this week.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Enterprise Sales Development. I'm Eric Quanstrom, the CMO at Cyence.
And I'm Caroline Maloney. I'm the Director of Sales Training and Enablement at Cyence.
Fun one today. We get to talk to a bird of my feather, a marketer. Tori Kindlick of Refine Labs, who you have a history of.
I do. Tori was my former boss in another life. What a great episode. I cannot thank Tori enough for coming on and sharing his wisdom. Tori is someone who has experience both as a salesperson, a sales leader, marketing leader, and now a VP of marketing at Refine Labs. So really great career trajectory there. Tori's great. And, you know, Eric, I think probably the key points for our listeners to look out for throughout this episode, we've got some terminology definition here. So Tori dives into the difference between demand gen and marketing, what the difference is, you know, where it's applicable. You know, he also talks about things that he hates that marketers do. I think that's probably one of the best parts of this podcast is some actual best practices from someone who has so much experience, you know, in this field. And two, I want to say, you know, for anyone who's interested in marketing at any level, right, Tori's LinkedIn is incredibly accessible and engaging. His posts make marketing makes so much sense. So give him a follow. Really can't wait for this episode.
Yeah. And we touched the third rail, right? Of SDR teams reporting up through marketing and really kind of giving a different perspective, which I think is going to be really enjoyable for our listeners out there. Let's get to it.
Well, it's a perfect place to start. I mean, like Tori, I reported to you. So, you know, cat's out of the bag. We know each other. And, you know, curious, what do you think? Like, what are your thoughts about sales teams reporting up to marketing? And where do you think that that's most successful? And yeah, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, speaking about, let's just say sales, you know, sales development teams, I think I like when you're, you know, seeing sales development teams reporting up into marketing, but ultimately I think the right place for them is whoever's going to give the folks on that team the right amount of attention that they need and that they deserve. And so if that's going to come from a marketing leader, great. If it's going to come from a sales leader, that's fine too. Whatever the case, you know, I think that many times that that sales development team can almost work as a bridge between sales and marketing in a lot of organizations. For me, my own personal stance, like I think that sales development is to me more of a form of marketing than it is a form of sales. You're trying to reach out to large amounts of people and get their attention. You're not trying to sell something or getting them to convert, so to speak, on a lot of the conversations that you're looking for. And you know, those are a lot of the principles of good marketing. So yeah, I think, if I had to choose and it was my team and we were talking about bringing on a group of sales development reps, my team, or possibly putting them on a sales team where, you know, hypothetically, they might just get lost in the shuffle or be deprioritized over other reps who are carrying, you know, a revenue quota or something like that. Then yeah, I think, you know, having them on the marketing team makes sense. But I guess conversely, if you've got a marketing leader that's not a believer in it and just feels that those people are those that are there to kind of, you know, just pound the phones and smile and dial and all that, you know, that's not going to be much of a recipe for success either. So yeah, I think it really just comes down to, you know, as long as they're under a leader that's going to care about them and help them grow and stay focused on what matters. Yeah, I think which team they roll up to is just kind of cosmetic.
Well, and unpacking that further, and I like the way that you use the right kind of attention as a label. Walk us through, because we already have a proof point here in understanding that you were a fantastic leader for Caroline while she was an SDR. Walk us through what that right kind of attention looks like, maybe even on a day-to-day level.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an enablement aspect of it that's going to be huge, right? And so helping the team really understand, your ICP, your buyers, right? Your products, that's going to be core to probably most functions at a company, especially those that are client facing. And so I think that those are probably the biggest and most important areas to be focusing, especially early on. When you have a group of people, especially those that might be a little bit more junior in their career, which I would say on average is oftentimes the case in with sales development reps, you know, a lot of times those people need more than just kind of the enablement within the role itself and understanding the product and the buyer. But, you know, they might need a little bit of help just understanding the way of working in you know, either a corporate environment or a startup scale-up environment, and really kind of learning the ropes in that respect. And a lot of those things can be even more challenging to do with the remote world that many of us are working in now. So yeah, I think really getting an understanding of you know, the type of tenure, the type of longevity that you've got on the team of sales development reps that you know, that you might be responsible for leading, and trying to assess where some of those gaps might be. You know, maybe you're in a company that has a well-established brand and tone of voice, and there's a lot of awareness, and so your focus is more with those reps on helping them understand, you know, where they can make the biggest impact. Is there a specific niche that, you know, we want them focusing on? Is there a campaign that we could really use their assistance and outreach on? And so I think, you know, that's oftentimes a good area to focus. But then you might also have, and this was, I think, more the case in the company that Caroline and I were working for together, where a lot of those things are not very well defined. There's not as much of a recipe for success. And so there's a lot more of just strategic planning going on. And understanding where the team can make the largest impact. If you've got limited resources, you know, where can you make sure that this team is focusing, that that they can provide the biggest and quickest impact?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder too. So, you know, talking a little bit about your experience at Refine Labs, like what tell us about Refine Labs and your title there and what you do, and maybe the difference between demand gen and lead gen, and you know what that means in marketing for some of our listeners who might not be familiar.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a VP of demand gen at Refine Labs. My job is really to lead a team of directors who effectively work as the main points of contact, oftentimes owning the entire demand generation strategy and execution, or sometimes, you know, just a kind of another member of the team that we're supporting, but leading, you know, a little bit more of the work in like the paid media realm. And so, yeah, our team is, I think, taking a bit of a unique approach in terms of how we work with our clients and how we look at demand generation. We focus exclusively on trying to drive high intent inbound leads, so hand raisers, demo requesters, and very little of what we do actually involves any type of outbound motion. But all of our clients utilize some sort of outbound motion. Sometimes it comes a little bit earlier in the sales cycle than in other points. And I think, like, you know, that's probably one of the biggest differences between lead gen and demand gen. Demand gen is all about first focusing on the, let's just say 99% of your target market is not in buying mode, focusing on how you can educate them, the right levers to pull, the right channels to be in, and how to really spend your paid media budget wisely to get the attention of the right people on those channels, so that when they do experience that trigger event, that pain point, that you've been serving them the right type of ads and content for long enough that your brand is going to be top of mind, and you've done enough work removing any friction points from the, you know, the inbound process, that it's going to be as easy as possible for those individuals to come inbound and get in touch with the right person and continue their journey, hopefully towards a purchase. When you talk about lead generation, I think really it's about looking more at signals and trying to identify, you know, if a person might in the future have interest in buying something from your team, much more of a push message than a pull message. And I think many times, you know, really trying to find people, kind of, you know, disrupt some of their maybe day-to-day workflows and get their attention and really, you know, try to get your brand in front of them that way. And perhaps also try to get them to commit to, you know, spending time with a member of your sales team to talk further about a solution or how, you know, your product or platform might make their day a little bit easier. So yeah, I think, you know, one of them is focused in demand gen much more on the, you know, middle to lower funnel, trying to find those people that are showing legitimate buying intent. And then the other one is certainly a little bit more of a numbers game. You know, there's going to be many false positives when you're just looking for signals and ways to, you know, reach out and grab a person and try to pull them into your sales motion, your sales cadence. And so many times that's an approach where the success rate, the win rate is just going to be a lot lower, but you know, certainly different tactics and approaches for one versus another.
You know, it's funny. I actually think of, and this is coming from a chief marketing officer, the DG and LG are kind of like BFFs in many respects when done right. And I'm curious if you share that same opinion.
Yeah, I like to say that lead generation is a byproduct of demand generation. And so if you're doing demand generation the right way, the leads will come to you. They will come inbound. It'll be easier for your sales team to convert leads. More people will have heard about you. There's some type of, hopefully positive, but there's some type of connection between your brand and some of the you know, the pains and challenges and ultimately resolutions that that they're looking for. And so, yeah, if you're doing all those things right, then I think the leads in whatever way, shape or form, you know, you determine that those are leads, they should be more plentiful. But, you know, with demand generation, I just look at it as a very proactive and something where you're really trying to play more of an educational role than maybe with lead generation. I think there's a little bit more convincing that needs to go on with a conversation like that.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is really creating familiarity and awareness in any successful demand gen effort, largely because those are always your friends for any business cycle that kicks off and starts. Frankly, they're your friends in the funnel as well as the sales cycle is happening. But I'm also curious if you're a big proponent of kind of like having demand gen efforts fronted, if you will, for a sales team by an inbound SDR or inbound SDR team, you know, as kind of a best practice.
It's not actually one of the best practices that I prefer. Maybe that's just, we're kind of, you know, maybe splitting hairs around some of the terminology there. But I think that there's a lot of ways that you can have a, you know, really positive impact on a sales funnel, on a sales motion through the marketing lens. And so, yeah, you know, I don't know that I've got a real strong stance or answer to that question specifically, but I don't know if you wanted to, you know, ask it another way, maybe I would have a different answer for you.
Well, my belief, and I've felt this for a long time, is that I kind of see the world as marketing serves sales. You know, most marketing efforts, if they're successful, will be the starter, if you will, the kickstarter, that awareness and familiarity. And when you're running successful programs, especially at volume, maybe the worst thing that you can introduce into a sales team or a sales bullpen, a series of sellers, are leads that aren't necessarily qualified or otherwise ready for a sales motion. And, you know, I find that the inbound SDR really provides not only a buffer, but accentuates what buyers themselves are most looking for, which is quick response, a company to be very nimble and responsive to them raising their hands, you know, and ultimately having the worst case scenario with any buyer is that, right, that lead languishes, that goes unattended to, if you will, from a company's standpoint. Oh yeah, no one followed up on that lead. I mean, that's a great way to frustrate and piss off any buyer that you might ever have. On the flip side, having salespeople themselves attending to every lead that would walk in the door, especially at volume, breaks down, in my experience, really fast. Because then what happens is sales has a real variable experience with all leads coming through the door, not just really well-qualified leads.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with the definition of a lead. And so, you know, if you're defining a lead as someone that is coming in and raising their hand and saying, hey, you know, I'm interested, I want a demo, you know, no matter what role you call that person, whether they're sales development or business development or an account executive, as long as they're able to answer the questions that the person has, speak intelligently. And my preference is that they can provide you some type of, you know, some type of demonstration, some type of look into the product that this person's inquiring about. You know, I think that that can be a helpful and oftentimes necessary step. A lot of things kind of, you know, play into that, right? Like the overall volume and again, that definition of the lead. So yeah, I think it can be a great role to, you know, for a company to have where, you know, there is one person that is effectively kind of triaging things. And the places where I've seen that role work best is when they're not necessarily following up on every type of cold lead, but rather they are the first touch point for anyone that comes inbound. And that person can, you know, like, let's say you've got like a some type of calendar link on your demo form, you know, as soon as that person looks to schedule, it would populate that, that individual's calendar. But I think that it's also great when that person can, let's say you've got some type of drift or whatever, some type of chat function on the site, and you can connect with that person immediately and just say, hey, do you want a demo right now? Right? Because if this person's capable of delivering that preview, and they're capable of answering the questions that the person has. Like I said, I don't care what you call the role, as long as they're able to answer a lot of those questions and create a positive first touch point, you know, for the potential buyer. And positive being a key word there, right? Because I think it can be a negative touch point if that person is really just looking to BANT qualify them. If I say, you know, I come to a website, I have interest in something, I want to buy something, I don't want to get qualified. I want to, you know, see what I came there for. And yeah, I think that there's certainly, you know, a lot of ways you could argue that, right? You know, if someone that's non-ICP kind of comes to your website, how do you handle people like that? Certainly in the enterprise level, when you've got hundreds or thousands of people coming in a day, you know, there's different kind of nuances there that you need to really figure out and handle. But yeah, overall, I you know, if you want to call them like an inbound SDR that handles that that first touch point, yeah, I think it can be a great step as long as you're really putting the buyer's needs first and not looking at it purely as a way to, you know, try to kind of toss something over the fence to a sales rep who is probably better, you know, better positioned to answer some of those questions.
Yeah. And what do you like, I'm curious about this. This is kind of a very specific question, but I know, you know, we've talked about this a lot. What do you think about gated content and, you know, leads that come from webinar lists or gated content through the website? Like, to me, I don't know that I'd call any of those contacts leads necessarily, right? Because, you know, they're not hand raisers. They're not genuine hand raisers. But what are your thoughts there? And along those lines, like, what are some other examples of practices, good or bad, that you've seen and what's been successful, you know, in that realm?
So I'm not a fan of gated content or considering webinar attendees or registrants to be leads, because they're not. They're just people who are maybe interested in your content and have decided that maybe it's worth exchanging their own contact information for that that content. I feel that people right now are almost like predisposed to think that if I submit my information for this piece of content, I'm going to get entered into some type of aggressive sales motion, or I'm not going to attend this webinar because I'm worried about someone, you know, kind of hounding me for weeks following, asking what I thought of the event and if I'm ready to buy something. And so when you kind of think about the more often than not, that's the way that many buyers today are looking at that that interaction, that value exchange. I think the better approach is to be ungating your content, putting it out there for the masses. There's going to be a much larger number of eyeballs that are going to be able to see your content, that are going to be able to see your webinars and maybe even attend your webinars live if they are not expecting or even are told, you know, not to expect that there's going to be a sales motion that will follow it. And so I think a lot of this as well kind of plays into this whole, you know, demand gen versus lead gen play, right? With the true demand generation, where you're really looking at educating your market and giving people all the tools that they need, providing value so that they know how to reach out to you and who to reach out to when it's time. You know, there's no need to be gating content or calling on webinar lists when that's the case. Not to say you shouldn't be producing content or having webinars. I think that they're both still very valuable, but maybe a better way to be utilizing an SDR instead of having people, you know, kind of chase down those folks is to say, all right, You know, in that 30-minute webinar, there was five or six different topics that we covered. And so the SDR should be out there on social media talking about those same topics and starting to create or engage in conversations about those things and really helping position themselves and their business, their brand, as a legitimate subject matter expert on those topics. And that's the way that you start to create that positive connection between the problem that they were talking about in the content or on the webinar and this, you know, this company that put it on, instead of creating that kind of negative first touch point where you attended a webinar because you thought it was interesting, but have vowed never to attend another webinar again because you got, you know, six phone calls a day for the next 6 weeks because someone, you know, thought that type of cadence might convince you to buy something.
Sounds like there's a little bit of hard lessons learned maybe around... Yeah. Or conversations that you might have had with CMOs or VPs of marketing or others that have hired Refine Labs and were doing something in that aggressive sales motion fronted by content prior to your guys' arrival. And my understanding of especially your particular agency's point of view is that's all wrong, that's a false premise.
Yeah, I think that's, for the most part, I would say that's kind of the collective thought on that for most of the folks that are at Refine Labs, that when you're talking about things like gated content or like, you know, almost tricking people into entering into a sales motion, that, okay, maybe there's going to be a couple quick wins there that you were able to grab that you might not have otherwise. But in the long run, your time and energy and resources are best focused on creating positive interactions with your people and with your brands, especially on places like social media, like on LinkedIn, where so many buyers are going today to just hone in their, you know, improve their craft and get better at what they do. And they're constantly looking to connect with people that can help them do that. And so if, you know, you have a team of people, no matter what you call them, marketing, sales development, but if you have a team of people that are putting themselves out there on, you know, on some of those social media platforms or whatever channels that you know your buyers are at, and they're the ones that are engaging in conversations, starting conversations, to me, that's a much better way to attract attention and awareness about your brand than maybe putting out, you know, a white paper with a nice hook as the headline, and hoping that enough people are going to download it that, you know, okay, if I've got a 1% conversion rate on these ebook downloads, which is, I would say, overly optimistic. If we get 100 downloads, then we're going to get one good lead out of it. I think you're much better off, you know, really trying to get positive and helpful engagement and conversations going with that team instead.
For what it's worth, in our own kind of like data across what is now thousands of accounts, when we have fronted content-led outbound, it's actually almost always performed worse than just kind of what we would call traditional outbound and, you know, reaching out on behalf of a brand, like almost cold start.
And so how do you all approach it in a way that is not content led, right? Because I think that's interesting. Maybe that's not an approach that there's quite as many companies or firms or sales development teams that are out there today are taking. And so, yeah, how do you all do it?
Well, I mean, we could probably have a podcast and I think we we may on this exact topic. That said, some of the fundamental tenets of the way that we run the program here at Science is all the content that we produce for the most part is ungated. And, you know, this podcast would be a great example of that. And so we're believers and we share the same, I think, thread of commonality there. In addition, the vast majority of our web leads that we generate, whether they're off landing pages, whether they're off our homepage, whether they're off of different pillar pages on our site, they're really like not faking the funk in any way, shape, or form. They're meet with sales, you know, and they're very driven, like, hey, you're going to initiate a sales motion with an inbound hand raise. And, you know, we take it as such. We're also huge believers in kind of meeting the client where they're at and being as responsive as possible. or the would-be client, I should say. So we have an entire fleet of inbound SDRs that are interacting as soon and as, you know, meaningfully as possible with everyone that kind of takes the time to express an interest in science. And the other thing that I didn't get a chance to kind of mention earlier, the reason why we think that that's important for our organization, and frankly, we think this is a belief that could be shared by a great many organizations out there, including all of our customers, is that that inbound SDR performs kind of a necessary buffer role, largely because, and we stay away from the BANT qualification, but we are into understanding our own persona and buying, you know, cohorts, buying groups, if you will, really well. And we want to understand what the situation is before, you know, kind of like we hand off to a science salesperson. So what that means is college kids doing research, your competitors, folks in countries that we don't even do business with, folks that have, you know, kind of more of a, in our case, B2C need as opposed to a B2B need that we just don't really service, would be better suited to kind of learn early and often that we're just not going to be a good match together. And to the extent that our inbound SDRs can play that role effectively, then we've just maximized everybody's time. And, you know, because we can't expect the entire world understands where we might be a great fit right off the bat. And in fact, our entire sales journey is geared around determining that fit, determining what, you know, kind of results or value we could really build in your organization. And so for that reason, we've kind of constructed a lot of pathways in that are all very cleanly marked. And then a lot of, you know, I hate this word, but I'm gonna use it anyways, gatekeepers all along that journey to provide value in service of bad fits, not wasting their time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then what about like from the outbound perspective, right? I'm sure that there's companies that want to contract you all to do some work together. And it's not just to work the people that are going to come in and raise their hand, right? So yeah, so like kind of how do you go about, you know, helping to find new business for your clients that way?
Yeah, I mean, we've found a few. And one of the things that I definitely appreciate about, and again, I'm going to keep this answer short because frankly, this podcast is about you and your thoughts and thought leadership. But I'll just say this, outbound is far from dead. And it's a great medium because it helps to bring the story, the brand, the ways that we've helped other, you know, companies, other departments, other titles, similar to our core personas, right? So the ability for us to have a meaningful discussion about how we can help grow revenue at a given organization is generally met with a lot of acceptance because, frankly, quotas are not getting smaller in any company that I've ever met. No one ever says, we're going to do less this year than we did the year before. And as such, you know, go-to-market channels are really wisely chosen or something that everyone should be thinking about as they grow their organization. And so we want to enter that conversation as appropriate, demonstrate capability that we think we can bring to the table, especially around targeting. I think that that's a real hallmark and differentiator around, you know, what science shows up and represents as. And then ultimately, if our client organizations determine that there's a good fit for them, establishing, scaling, running an outbound motion, you know, we're a good choice.
Yeah, no, and that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, to me, the most impactful use of outbound to really, you know, kick off or initiate the sales process is when it's done with a lot of focus on targeting, like you mentioned. And then the other part being that it's a truly personalized outreach, not one that's supposed to appear personalized, right? Because there's enough tools out there that can help with those things, but it's also pretty easy to see through it. And my whole feeling is that, you know, if you as a sales development rep don't have enough time to look into my background for 3 to 5 minutes to personalize your approach that you're going to use to reach out to me, why should I agree to give you 30 to 60 minutes of my time, you know, just because I got a message from you? And so, yeah, and I think that the targeting plays a huge part in that. The more narrow you and your team can get with targeting, the better and more specific your message is going to be. And I'm sure the easier it would be for your team of sales development reps to really maybe be able to scale an approach like that, because Sure, it can be difficult to do personalization, true personalization at scale, but I also think that it's worth it as compared to the alternative, which would be, you know, certainly swinging the pendulum the way opposite direction, but just kind of the mass blast outreach and playing the pure numbers game, which I think is going to create more of a negative brand impact for most companies than a positive one, even if you do get a couple of folks that are going to, you know, take the bait.
Yeah, I think my favorite example of that is getting LinkedIn, you know, video messages in my LinkedIn of someone just holding my name up on a little whiteboard and that's it. It just, that's the only personalization of the whole video. And I just think it's so funny because I think people get personalization at scale totally wrong. It's like that, yeah, that's not personal. It might be personal, but it's not personalized. But Tori, I latched onto something you said earlier about LinkedIn. So you said something about webinars and, you know, of course, we're not going to chase down a list of people who attended a webinar and act like they're leads, but rather to have your SDRs kind of strategically work with 3 to 5 pieces of content from those webinars on LinkedIn. Can you talk a little bit more about, you know, being a spokesperson for your company on LinkedIn and how SDRs can do this, right, at whatever company they're working for or on their own to build their personal brand?
Yeah, I mean, I think on LinkedIn, so many of us are prone to, you know, focus on just finding and following people that are legitimate experts in their field. And that's an awesome perk of LinkedIn is that, you know, we can find, you know, dozens or hundreds or thousands of people like that. But I think that there's also a ton of value in, you know, just finding people that are in a common network or have, you know, common issues and being able to just have open dialogue with them and really create relationships that way through those positive interactions and by really, you know, trying to help educate people and not so much, you know, hook them and bring them into a sales motion. If I'm connected with someone and, you know, they're, you know, day in and day out talking about for the most part, the same topics, you know, even if they're a more junior level person, they're still going to have different experiences related to that topic that might be relevant to me. And even if it's not relevant to me, like maybe I'm the decision maker, the contract signer, there's going to be other people at my organization who might have more of a common thread to find with that person that's out there. And like, I think that's, if you've heard any of the content that Refine Labs puts out, you know, that's kind of that whole dark social element, right? When people are going to a lot of the one-to-one conversations, Slack communities, you know, internal Slack channels and sharing screenshots or snapshots, all those things that are not trackable, that would never show up on an attribution report or get you pulled into some type of sales motion, that's where a lot of the influence and the initiation of a true buying process really starts. And so
ends.
Yeah, true, or ends. Yeah. And so like, if your team is number one, really in tune with your buyers, understand where they are and what they care about, and is putting out that very shareable type of content, whether it be snippets from the webinar or just, you know, their own free thoughts in text form or video form or even TikToks on the topic, it doesn't matter. As long as the content's valuable and it's shareable, those are the things that can, I think, have a real true impact, you know, for the sales development function. And it doesn't necessarily just have to be about getting a list of email addresses and phone numbers, however that happens, and you know, reaching out to as many people as possible, but rather, you know, getting strategic, finding your niche, picking your angles, and you know, leaning into it.
All right, brace yourself. I'm about to ask you about TikTok. So I'm curious what your thoughts are, seriously, because TikTok, you know, a couple of years ago, it was kind of this weird platform that no one knew much about, and then during COVID, it just totally like exploded. I mean, it's now, I think, the most popular engagement platform, social media platform, like ever. And I'm curious, how do you feel people are using it, could be using it? Like, what are your thoughts on TikTok and marketing?
Yeah, so you're right. It is, in terms of like, I think monthly users, I believe TikTok does own the top spot right now on all major social media platforms. And the part that has surprised me the most over the past couple months is learning that the biggest and fastest growing segment is not, you know, the under 25, but it's rather that like probably like 26 to 40 demographic. Don't quote me on exactly where those kind of age bands are, but people are gravitating towards that platform right now. And I don't think that that is a trend that's going to reverse itself. I think that you're going to continue seeing TikTok just pulling further and further ahead. And that's for a couple of reasons. Number one, I mean, the video content is something that I think many people and even different hardware like your phone and even your laptop and everything, like everything is much more designed today for video production than it is for, you know, just kind of the text focused content of years past. But additionally, and this is kind of what I mentioned related to dark social, it's the shareability of the content. So I was watching TikTok content for probably a year or a year and a half before I ever signed up for the platform, because I was getting TikTok sent to me by people. I was able to watch it. It's very watchable and shareable. Like the clip might be 5 seconds, 10 seconds long, but good content is good content, right? And so, yeah, I think, you know, for those reasons, TikTok is going to continue to be, you know, a huge platform for marketers and sellers. I think the biggest challenge with it is people trying to figure out how to use it the right way, knowing that a lot of people are there and spending time there. Any marketer is going to say, okay, if my buyers are there and spending time there, then I need to be there too. But you can't just replicate the same approach that you're taking on LinkedIn and think that it's going to work on TikTok. And we can come back to this, but oddly enough, we do have a guy on our team at Refine Labs who is proving that it does work in reverse. You can put things out there on TikTok and they will perform really, really well on LinkedIn, to the point where I've seen his growth, his follower count just explode ever since he's really gone hard on the TikTok game. And so the biggest thing I think is just understanding that the TikTok platform, that, you know, attention is maybe going to be even more limited than on some other platforms. And so not trying to create a 5 to 10 minute video, even if they do have that functionality now, I don't think that it's going to be all that widely adopted anytime in the near future. But really, trying to utilize a platform like that one to help personify your brand, show that you've got a little bit of personality, right? You know, I can't tell you how many like IT companies out there that say like, hey, we're fun, we've got personality, but yet they don't show it. And maybe they do have those personalities working on the team behind the scenes, infused in their content. That's the perfect team to be trying to find a way to get onto TikTok and put that out there for the world, because people gravitate towards personalities like that. People like doing business with people they know and have spoken with and have developed a relationship, even if it's a superficial relationship that's done through following someone on social media. You know, it can be a great entry point, not to mention the fact that, like, even if it's not the fastest growing segment, it's probably still the largest user group. But that younger age group that is really probably dominating the TikTok usage statistics right now, okay, maybe they don't have buying power today, but they sure will in the next 5 to 10 years. And so what's wrong with, really trying to develop those relationships and connect with those people and create that brand affinity now, recognizing that so many of those people are going to have that buying power and that buying authority in the future.
Very well said and reasoned, I might add. You know, you said something twice now on this podcast that I think is worth unpacking and peeling the layers of the onion even more. And that is developing a niche, right? Or a niche, depending on one's pronunciation. And I mention that because there's a lot of people that say riches are in the niches. And ultimately, I'm guessing that that's something that you advise clients on all the time, is how to develop a niche and some of your marketing consulting, if you will, going forward. Am I anywhere close to the truth?
Yeah. I think, there's probably some different ways that, you know, we like to kind of encourage our clients to think about and approach efforts like this. But to me, what you're talking about is really positioning. And positioning, I think part of it is understanding that, like, you know, it's human nature for all of us to really think in terms of like categories, but that doesn't mean that that entire category is appropriate to everyone, right? And so finding a corner of that category where, you know, maybe your happiest customers are right now, and you know that there are more people that could potentially be happy customers as well, you know, putting your stake in the ground there and saying, this is who we are and this is where we want to grow. That is where I think marketers and sellers, and frankly, you know, a lot of startups and scale ups should be focused on, not trying to be everything to everyone, not trying to have, you know, a massive kind of top level nav on their website with every single persona under the sun that might have some type of like secondary or tertiary use case for your product, but just, you know, focusing on what matters, whether that be from, you know, qualitative feedback from your clients about how happy they are, how much value they're getting, or you use some type of like LTV formula to quantify where your most valuable customers are. But whatever it is, trying to own the entire market, like, you know, you can leave that stuff for like the Salesforces and the IBMs of the world. The rest of us need to figure out how to carve out a corner of the market and really dominate it before we can figure out how to, you know, take over and own an entire category.
You mean people don't eat the entire buffet upon entry?
I can only speak for myself, but I've definitely gotten some hard looks from the owners at buffets that I've been into. But I think for the most part, usually people like to go into a buffet and graze a little bit, you know, rather than try to fill up their entire plate multiple times until they get asked to leave. But hey, to each their own on that one, right?
But the business parallels are so obvious, right?
Like, right.
You know, especially when you think about like those happy customers in the corner. I think that's great phraseology, by the way. I'm going to steal it from you. You know, that's for customers or people at the buffet. That's them picking, you know, the steak versus the chicken. That's them getting the fish versus the, you know, pasta. It's ultimately like the place to be, because you're going to find when you make people happy, there's brand halo effects to all of that, and word of mouth, and really good business principles 101 style for conducting and growing any business, right? Like, hey, here's happy customers in this niche. Let's go mine that niche for more of those folks.
Exactly. And talking to those happy customers and finding out why they're so happy and how they talk about your product, right? That can be a tip on the way that you message yourself, is hearing how your happiest clients are talking about you. Not something you necessarily want to over-index on, but it can be a helpful tip as well for those companies out there that have a little bit of muddled messaging right now. You know, that can be a way to get a little bit of clarity on it and really get a better understanding of your niche or your niche and where, you know, it might make the most sense for your team to be spending a majority of their time. Because, maybe you do have a lot of people that come into your buffet and get the steak, but you've got even more people that come in and get the chicken. And those people that come in and get the chicken every single day make up a large percentage of the revenue that you bring in for your business. So if I'm owning that buffet, that restaurant, I'm trying to put out more chicken dishes, even if I've got some really happy steak eaters in there. It's really all about trying to kind of, you know, figure out the right places to prioritize your resources.
Work smarter, not harder. I remember you telling me that in our very first, maybe our second one-on-one, I don't know. But I like that. Work smarter, not harder.
There you go.
So kind of bringing it home, because we could probably talk for a significant period of time on all these subjects. I'm interested in having you kind of give access to or otherwise tell our listeners where they could learn more about Tori, where they can find out more about Refine Labs, or anything else that you care to share as far as what you're up to.
Sure. So for me personally, as last I checked, I'm the only Tori Kindlick on LinkedIn. And so that might be my only claim to fame on that platform, but it should make it easier to find me in case you want to, you know, add to your connections, your followers. As far as like any, you know, content I put out, I try to put out some original content on LinkedIn maybe once or twice a week. But you know, I am part of the Refine Labs Hive Mind, and our collective team puts out a whole lot of content on LinkedIn on a daily basis. And of course, I'm biased, but I also really believe it's some of the best content that's being put out there on LinkedIn right now. So yeah, you know, it just kind of go on a following spree of people from Refine Labs, and there's probably not too many people you're going to be disappointed that you decided to follow there. We also have our company was almost built on the backbone of a podcast in the State of Demand Gen, the one that Chris Walker, our CEO, started a couple of years ago, just surpassed the 100 episode mark. And actually, coincidentally, we just surpassed the 100 employee mark at our company just recently. So lots of growth happening there. But we just stood up another podcast that's really all of the Refine Labs employees, you know, kind of getting a chance to take the stage and get in front of the microphone and talk about a lot of the same topics that we talk about with clients or that, you know, Chris and Megan talk about on the State of Demand Gen podcast. But we're focused on really much more of the tactical execution, right? And really giving people the tips that that we believe they would need to go, not just, you know, kind of hear about why we're doing the things that we're doing, but also how to go about, you know, initiating it and doing it yourself. So that podcast is called The Marketing Movement. You can find it on, you know, on Apple, on Spotify, you name it. Or yeah, like I said, just start kind of following along some of those Refine Labs folks on LinkedIn. And yeah, you'll probably stumble across it at one time or another.
Very cool. Well, Tori, this has been a real pleasure to have you on our podcast and sharing some of your wisdom. And I would encourage all of our listeners to go and find even more of that goodness on your podcast. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been great.